It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
An Ebola quarantine center is attacked and looted in Monrovia. Despite international concerns for a ceasefire, militia violence continues in Libya. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. There is alarm over the possibility of spreading the deadly Ebola virus in the Liberian capital, Monrovia, following a late Saturday protest on an Ebola quarantine center in the city's West Point district. Protesters opposed to the center attacked and looted it, forcing some patients and health workers to flee. Officials say men armed with clubs broke into the building, stealing items from the clinic, likely infected by the virus. Ebola has killed more than 1,140 across West Africa, including more than 400 in Liberia. The head of the medical charity group Doctors Without Borders, known as MSF, Joanne Liu, says the three most affected countries are in different stages of coping with the disease.
In terms of stability, I think that in Guinea, because they've been dealing with this for 5 months, they have more measures being put in places and they have more capacity and as well a greater understanding of what's going on. Whereas for Sierra Leone and Liberia, they only started to have cases for the last few weeks.
She warns the situation in Liberia remains the most dangerous.
If we don't stabilize Liberia, we'll never stabilize the whole region. So that's today one of the places that needs to have fast and quick action.
On Saturday, Kenya announces closing its borders to travelers from Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Kenya Airways also said it's suspending flights to Liberia and Sierra Leone. The new chairman of the Southern African Development Committee, host Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe, told delegates Sunday at the opening session in Victoria Falls to reduce their reliance on foreign aid and make better use of the region's resources. Mr. Mugabe told the 15-member bloc continued over-reliance on the goodwill of the region's cooperation partners compromises the organization. He urged them to exploit the region's abundant resources to add value to its exports. During the summit, SADC leaders are expected to discuss a deepening of bilateral relations between member states, in addition to peace and security matters and economic development. Rights groups have called on the 15-member bloc to address human rights violations among its members, including arrests of political activists and journalists. With that part of the story, Sebastian Mofu.
Deputy Mucena heads the Southern Africa Office of Amnesty International. He says Mr. Mugabe might have to steer away from his previous tactics now that he's becoming SADC's chairman.
One of the things that happens whenever you assume chair of SADC is that citizens across the region look up to you as a country and as a leader to resolve problems in their own countries. It's possible that other countries would be looking up to the next chair of SADC to raise concerns taking place in their own countries, because the spotlight will be on it as it is on SADC.
Pro-democracy activist Wandile Dludlu from Swaziland says human rights abuses and democracy should be one of the issues SADC leaders discuss at their meeting in Victoria Falls. One human rights violator cited frequently is Swaziland, where the monarch is known to actively prosecute journalists and criminalize freedom of expression. Indexes of international press freedom routinely rank Zimbabwe, Malawi, and Swaziland in the bottom quarter of nations. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
In Libya, Reuters reports unidentified aircraft flew over the capital Tripoli today and explosions could be heard. A television channel reported the aircraft were targeting positions where militia had been fighting for control for over a month. Militia traded gunfire and shells in various parts of the city Sunday, ignoring international appeals for a ceasefire. Rival militia from Misrata and fighters allied to the western town of Zintan have been wrestling for control of the city in the worst clashes since the 2011 uprising that brought down dictator Muammar Gaddafi. 7 wedding guests were killed, 3 others wounded when they were blown up by a landmine in the troubled southern region of Casamance near the Gambian border. The region has been jolted by a separatist rebellion which broke out in 1982. South Africa proved too strong for Zimbabwe, making 309-3 and bowling the home team out for 216 to win the first one-day international by 93 runs at Queen's Sports Club on Sunday. The second and third games are also scheduled in Bulawayo both Tuesday and Thursday. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from The Voice of America. I'm Peter Clote in Washington. Today is Monday, August 18, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's former Vice President Riek Machar has rejected a proposal to name him as second Vice President in a transitional unity government.
I want a peace agreement of which a transitional government would be its product. As long as there is no peace agreement, I'm not interested in any government.
That the former Vice President of South Sudan, Riek Machar. Justice Ministry officials in South Sudan complain about their working conditions. And the President of Liberia spent a day answering public questions about Ebola and measures to contain it.
The best way for you to control it is to stay away from people who you say is sick. They signal a barb or a laser too. A laser because if you wash your hand, if you don't touch somebody, it can go away. If you do the right thing, there's some people who have it who can't catch up.
That's Helen Johnson Sirleaf, the president of Liberia. In Zimbabwe, an anti-corruption group calls for a probe of a provincial affairs minister. Those stories plus Mark Oume's sport and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan former Vice President Riek Machar has rejected President Salva Kiir's proposal to name him as second Vice President in a transitional unity government. The goal was to include both Machar and Kiir in the same government before next year's vote as part of a deal to end the country's seven-month conflict. Mr. Machar heads the rebellion against the government in Juba. He told me earlier that his representatives at the talks in Addis Ababa want to resolve the conflict with direct face-to-face peace talks with officials of the government.
Well, personally, I blame the mediators because at times they would suspend the peace talks without a good reason. And particularly when the chief mediator went to New York, we could have continued the peace talks and we were saying we want to have direct talks. But now the mediators are insisting that there would be round table talks with five others, the civil society organizations, the faith-based groups, political parties, and the former political detainees, in addition to the two parties, the SPL, MSPLA, and the government. Personally, I believe that direct talks between us and the government will yield quicker results and will ensure that the peace agreement is arrived to faster than having others on the table, on the round table. You know, the history of round tables and negotiations suggests that it takes a longer time to get to peace agreement.
People are blaming you for undermining the cessation of hostilities agreement you signed with President Kiir, and they said that your forces undermined that agreement by attacking government troops and unarmed civilians. What is your response to that?
First of all, the accusation is false. I think you have heard President Kiir talking many times publicly that the Ugandan troops would not leave the country unless peace is brought about. And the cessation of hostilities stipulates that the Ugandan forces must withdraw, and they should have withdrawn last January. And up to now, they're in South Sudan. In addition to that, the Sudanese rebels are still in South Sudan. They're part of the cessation of hostilities. And many attacks, if you make a map of when the cessation of hostilities was signed, since January 23rd, and you map out the locations of the government at that time, and you compare it with the locations they are in today, it will show you that they're the ones advancing and they're the ones violating the cessation of hostilities.
President Kiir has said that he will name you as the second deputy in a unity government. Will you take that offer?
What I want is a peace agreement. I want a resolution of the conflict. I want the root causes of the conflict to be addressed. And I want a federal system of governance to be instituted in South Sudan. I want reforms in the SPLA army, in the national security organs. I want reforms in the public service, in the judiciary. I want a peace agreement of which a transitional government would be its product. As long as there is no peace agreement, I'm not interested in any government.
Riek Machar is the former vice president of South Sudan and leader of the rebel movement fighting the government in Juba. He spoke with me earlier from Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. Liberia is now reporting more Ebola deaths than any other country in this regional outbreak, at least 413 people. Doctors Without Borders says the situation there is catastrophic. An Ebola isolation unit in the capital came under attack late Saturday, just hours after Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf spent the day with education teams in communities around Monrovia trying to answer people's questions about Ebola and urge them to comply with containment measures. VOA's and Luke has more with reporting in Monrovia by Prince Collins.
President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf says they can beat Ebola.
Stay in your area. Don't move to another place. Wait till you get treatment. If everybody were to follow that one, then we can start to bring this thing down.
The president accompanied awareness teams to two of the hardest hit communities around the capital.
And with the neighbors, they came out to say that it was Ebola. And they sent for the team. And the team came.
Hundreds of people showed up to listen and ask questions. This is West Africa's first Ebola outbreak. People are still learning what it is. The virus continues to gallop ahead of response efforts. In Liberia, families continue to hide their sick at home. Health workers and facilities have come under attack. An angry mob raided an isolation unit set up in the West Point area of Monrovia late Saturday. There is concern that looters may have stolen contaminated hospital materials and that Ebola patients may have run away and could be exposing others. President Sirleaf told reporters earlier that day that some people are still refusing to believe Ebola is real. She said that has to stop and people need to follow health recommendations.
The best way for you to control it is to stay away from people who you say is sick. This sickness is bad, but it lays it too. It lays it because if you wash your hand, if you don't touch somebody, it can go away. If you do the right thing, there's some people who have it who got better.
She says sick people need to seek treatment. Ebola is transmitted through close contact with a sick person's bodily fluids. Getting Ebola patients into properly outfitted isolation units serves two purposes. It stops them from infecting others, and it gives them a better shot of fighting off the virus. About 40% of people infected in this regional outbreak have fought off the virus with medical assistance, like rehydration therapy. But existing treatment units in Monrovia and in the most affected border areas are overflowing with patients. Doctors Without Borders opened a new treatment unit Saturday with 120 beds, the biggest yet. But already medical workers say they don't expect it to be enough. Anne Luck, VOA News, Dakar.
It's Monday, August 18, and you are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Peter Clote in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Ahead on our program, Mark Omer Sports and our Listener of the Day. Investigators from the United Nations will travel north of Bangui, Central African Republic capital city, this week to confirm the alleged killing of 34 residents by rebel Seleka forces. MINUSCA's spokesperson Wuluwulakana Ikavi tells Rikish Ryok the researchers will look into media reports that 34 people were killed in attacks from August 10 to 15 in Imbre and surrounding villages. The UN Security Force MINUSCA is scheduled to deploy 12,000 peacekeepers to CAR in September. Late last month, rival factions in CAR announced a ceasefire after more than a year of fighting that has displaced almost a quarter of the country's 4.6 million residents.
We had the news 34 persons have been killed in the north of Bangui, not far from Kagabandoro, actually. What MINUSCA does when we have this information is to send investigators from human rights section to go and check and verify the information. So right now, that we are preparing to do.
You said you heard from local media about the deaths of 34 people. Are they reporting that it was fighters from the Seleka group?
What is said in the media is, yes, those who committed those killings are from Seleka Group. But once again, this cannot be confirmed right now.
Have you yet sent this fact-finding group? And if you have not yet sent them, when will MINUSCA send them?
No, not yet, but they are preparing to go. You know, in the coming days, they will be on the ground.
What does this mean for the ceasefire that was signed weeks ago?
You know, the situation is a big challenge. It's a challenge, actually. The challenge is to keep the people who signed the ceasefire to respect the agreement they signed. So we're still fighting, we're still encouraging the whole population to defend that ceasefire to make the peace happen.
Is your group hearing about other attacks like this that are going on in the countryside in CAR?
We have news of some small fights going on, you know, but this news, the number 34 is quite a big number. 34 persons, if this is true, is very worrying, you know. So it's a very serious issue right now.
Are alleged attacks like this one of the things that the 12,000-strong peacekeeping mission from the UN that is supposed to deploy in September will be trying to stop?
We have a mandate, but also the priorities of the moment will be how the environment will be.
What date is the mission supposed to deploy?
The handover ceremony, the handover between MINUSCA and MINUSCA is on the 15th of September. But the troops will be deployed, will be already here in the country and deployed on the ground according to the plan. The focus will be the security of the population in Bangui and also in the countryside.
That was Uwolowulakana Ikavi, a spokesperson for MINUSCA, the UN peacekeeping force in Central African Republic, CAR. She was speaking to Ricky Shryok from Bangui. In Zimbabwe, a pressure group campaigning against graft, the Coalition Against Corruption, is calling on parliament to probe Masvingo Provincial Affairs Minister Kudakwashe Bashikiti. He is alleged to be involved in the disappearance of some money and other donations meant for Chinkwizi flood victims. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Coalition Against Corruption Director Terry Mutswanga says his organization is unhappy with reports that more than $500,000 donated by the Chinese government to assist the Chinguizi flood victims has not reached its intended beneficiaries.
We understand that there was some United States, $500,000 dollars that was handed over by the Chinese embassy some few months ago to assist the victims of the flooding. But we do not even know how that money was disbursed or was used in actually assisting the flood victims. Because when we toured Chinguizi on several occasions, we could hear complaints from disgruntled villagers that they are going to bed on empty stomachs. So there's greater need to actually look into that.
Mutswanga called on parliament to set up a probe team to investigate the Tokwe Mukosi government-appointed committee led by Masvingo Provincial Affairs Minister Kudakwashe Bashikiti.
I think there is need for parliament to set up a committee that actually investigates on how the donations that were disbursed to the people of Chinguizi were used. Because there were reports that came out saying such donations were abused by greedy officials who went on to loot the donations at the expense of the suffering people of Chinguizi. So there is greater need to look into this issue so that if there are any individuals who actually looted these donations are brought to book.
Meanwhile, the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says it is concerned by the deteriorating food situation at Chinguizi following recent skirmishes at the transit camp. ZLHR spokesperson Kumbirai Mafunda tells Studio 7 that the shortage of food at Chinguizi is now threatening the flood victims' constitutional right to food.
We interacted with villagers from Chingwizi when we went there to assist them with legal assistance as Babu Lawyers for Human Rights. We remain concerned by the reports which CAC has unearthed about the denial of food. We interacted with these villagers whereby they told us about the food rations that they get, which they said were insufficient or inadequate. They spoke about the rations to do with peas and maize, which they said was inadequate to meet their needs. So we remain concerned by the situation in Chingwizi as Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, and applaud efforts by CAC and other organizations to go and assist the people of Zimbabwe, of Chingwizi, rather than being seated in these offices.
For his part, Basket said that he would welcome the setting up of a probe team to look into the corruption allegations. He said this would help clear his name and that of his committee. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
In South Sudan, hundreds of Justice Ministry officials are complaining about poor working conditions. More than 400 legal counsels and other justice employees deployed across South Sudan say they are not being paid transport allowance, which makes it difficult for them when they have to travel long distances to their work. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu filed this report from Juba.
The legal counsels warn unless the government moves quickly to address their grievances, they will walk off the job. Aside from not receiving a transport allowance, many say they have worked for several years for the Justice Ministry but have never received a promotion, a violation, they say, of the country's labor laws. Justice Ministry lawyer Niel Awo says the government has failed to improve their working conditions.
We have a problem means of transport. It is difficult for me as a lawyer, and I am providing services to the public to have no facilities of taking me to the place of work or to go to the court or many things. In addition to the issues which are here in the ministry, environment, good conducive for the legal counsels, to check that he conducted his work properly. These are the things relating to the working environment.
Malwal Duar, another legal counsel, says this is not the first time they have raised their concerns and demanded better working conditions.
We have been asking the ministry to sort this problem out. It started from the former ministers, those who were here before. So that was 2009. After that, we have been following this issue.
Lawyer Sabri Waniladu says the government needs to move quickly to address their complaints if it expects them to continue working.
The minister and also the government of South Sudan to take into consideration all these issues so that development will be seen by the people, because at the end, people expecting from the Ministry of Justice to do justice in the country.
Last weekend, the lawyers met face-to-face with South Sudan's Justice Minister, Paulino Wanawila, in hopes that the government would address their concerns. Wanawila says due to austerity measures imposed by the government following the oil shutdown in early 2012, funding has not been available to improve the legal counsel's working conditions. But Wanawila says the Kiir administration is aware of the lawyers' concerns and is trying to fix the problems.
In the current situation, with the way of the scarcity of the available resources, and that is where some of the things are not got on due time, such as some of the financial issues that they are complaining about.
But the lawyers say talk is cheap and they will believe there is change when they see it.
In the meeting, we have agreed in so many on most of this aspect, and we have agreed also that this will be followed and be sorted out by the administration in order to show that things will be also made, life will be made easy for the legal counsels. And this also will apply to the non-legal counsels for their other rights that they may be entitled to and which they are claiming.
The ministry's 400 legal counsels provide legal services to national and state governments, which include prosecuting cases at the state level and drafting new laws at the national level. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here's Mark Auma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Peter. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Rwanda is disqualified from the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations, the Confederation of African Football revealed in Cairo, Egypt. Rwanda had eliminated Libya and Republic of Congo to advance to the main qualifying contest starting next month. According to CAF, the Rwandese fielded Birori Dadi, who is not eligible to play for Rwanda. Hence, Rwanda is disqualified and is replaced by the Republic of Congo. On a more cheerful note, Nigerian Falconet thrashed New Zealand 4-1 at the FIFA Women's Under-20 World Cup in Moncton, Canada on Sunday. The Falconets advanced to the semifinals where they face North Korea on Wednesday. Meanwhile, Gabon held their hosts Ghana to a scoreless draw in the Orange African Under-20 Championship qualifiers in Accra on Sunday. Republic of Congo beat defending champions Egypt 2-0. Libya edged Ivory Coast 2-1. Cameroon and South Africa drew 1-1 as Zambia pipped Malawi 2-1. In Rwanda, Uganda's Kampala City Council authorities pipped Rwanda's military side APR 1-0 as Djibouti's Telkom and Kenya's Gor Mahia drew 2-2. At the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's Sekafa Kagame Club Championship on Sunday. Early on Saturday, Tanzania's mainland's Azam beat Ethiopia's Adama 4-1 as Rwanda's Rayon Sports edged South Sudan's Atlabara 1-0. On Friday, Burundi's Atletico edged Djibouti's Telkom 2-1. APR and Gor Mahia drew 2-2 as Sudan's El Merrek and Burundi's Vitalo drew 1-1. With the group phase over, defending champions Vitalo failed to qualify for the quarterfinals. Instead, Rwanda's APR, Rayon Sports and Police joined Burundi's Atletico, Azam, KCCA, Atlabara and El Merrek in the quarterfinals. Meanwhile, Kenya beat the United States of America 22-12 before losing 24-0 to France, while Spain beat Tunisia 32-0 in the boys' rugby seven-a-side contest at the Olympic Youth Games in Nanjing, China on Sunday. Mexico overpowered Namibia 9-0 in girls' football. Today, Monday, Tunisia plays Spain and Brazil in boys' 3-on-3 basketball, while Egypt face Taiwan in the girls' contest. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Auma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, Peter, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Monday morning, August 18.
I call on the National Assembly as a matter of urgency to pass the National Conference report in Nigeria into law as a new constitution. The issue of referendum should be ruled out because it is a waste of time, a waste of money, and a waste of energy for us, Nigeria. Comrade Mazi Patrick Okoroka for Owo Blue Premises at an Anasuku in Adja State, Nigeria.
Thank you, listener, for your comment. Please send your viewpoint to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. And that's it for this Monday, August 18 edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, managing editor William Eagle, as well as sports editor Mark Auma, and Peter Clotte in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.